Humbugger Jeep Cherokee. Just $199 down. Woo-hoo! You're driving around Philly town. Your radio's not broken. You heard me right. You can buy a Gary Barber Cherokee. Just $199 Woo-hoo! Down. Is Barbera on the boulevard the best? Boy, I guess.
Yo!
You saw it, now buy it at Barbera. High, wide, and handsome, big, bad, bodacious. Rugged Jeep Cherokee. $199 down. Woo-hoo! You're driving around Philly town.
Live from the Mod Philly Lawyer Studio. When winning matters most. WRNB Media. Philadelphia. Philly's R&B station. 100.3 WRNB.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
This program has been paid for by My Philly Lawyer.
Good morning. Court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. I am your host, Dean Weitzman, live and in the studio right here on 555 City Ave, 100.3 WRNB.
Classics 1079.
There you go. Legal's out of the way. Folks, sit back and relax. We got a very interesting show today. You know, just to start it off, I was doing a little reading on my way into the studio today.
What were you reading?
Well, you know, Trump and his family have made like $4 billion off of the presidency already between crypto deals, and they gave their naming rights to the Saudis. But the coolest and the reason I was looking at that is because the most amazing thing that they've done recently as if, you know, it's like every day is a new treat. But the most amazing thing is he sued the IRS for $10 billion for the leakage of his private information and his tax returns. Now, if you don't see a conflict there, he's appointed the Department of Justice who has to defend the IRS. Is that wild?
No, it's Trump. It's just Trump, man.
There may be even some merit to his claim. I mean, if I was representing him, I'd find merit there. I mean, there might be. But the conflict is so egregious that it defies my brain. My head's ready to explode.
Every day there's another chaotic something.
I will say this.
Every day.
If I had to defend the IRS in this case, which I don't think the Department of Justice will bother doing, he's probably over the statute of limitations. 2-year statute of limitations. I think he missed it by a few months. I don't think they'll raise that as a defense to this claim, but we'll see. Anyway, that's my story with Mr. Trump. I'm not going to get derailed here by that. I see the eyes of my producer on me burning a hole into my skull saying, there's a very important person online. Okay, bring him on. Larry Krasner.
He's back.
The District Attorney of Philadelphia. Welcome back to Court Radio, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to talk to people.
FAFO. Beep. Around and find out. What does that mean to you?
Answer that very carefully.
I will answer it. So we had an election, you may recall, and there was a lot of worry. This would be the second time Trump was elected. There's a lot of worry that there's going to be election interference, a lot of worry about paramilitary groups showing up near the polls to intimidate people and other activity like that, bribed votes, that sort of thing. Let's remember, we were dealing with Elon Musk literally paying people to sign a petition and to sign up to vote, which I still think is illegal. But anyway, that was going on, and there was a press conference on Election Day. And I made it clear that is, you know, part of my job. We're not going to have people messing with elections, that every vote is going to be counted regardless of who it's for. And if you don't like that, you're going to F around and find out, was actually what was said at that time. It's, you know, I didn't invent the phrase, and nor did I script it. It just came out.
You modified it, though. You modified it.
I made it into an F. I was trying to be good with people in the houses of faith. So I made it an F rather than the full word for the first word. But anyway, here we are, a year plus later. Who's running around saying FAFO? Pete Hegseth, blowing up boats with people we will never even identify, probably including, you know, fishermen and their kids, these little boats that are shuttling drugs, maybe. Who knows what they're shuttling from one place to another, getting blown up. And if anybody survives, they blow them up again. And now we see Trump and Pete Hegseth and this whole bunch of clowns around him walking around saying FAFO. So we have reclaimed the phrase.
All right.
And we have reclaimed it. By we, I mean a large number of state court prosecutors who actually believe in their oath, which is to uphold the Constitution and the laws and also to seek justice. We have gotten together, formed a group to deal with everything that the Trumpvasions of different cities entails. For example, if you're going to shoot people to death without lawful justification, if you're going to commit criminal homicide, we are prosecutors who know that we can prosecute that case from beginning to end. And if there is a conviction, the defendant, even if it is a federal officer, will do every day of that sentence, because Donald Trump has zero ability to pardon a state court conviction, right? On the other hand, if you have militias, you know, people who are not federal officials joining in, starting to do brutal racist things to people, we would be ready to go after that. I know it's okay with Donald Trump when he has a bunch of thugs committing crimes, including crimes that you may recall directly and indirectly caused the deaths of five law enforcement officers on January 6th when he tried to, stop Joe Biden from being the president he was supposed to be. So we're worried about that. We're worried about civilians jumping in. But, I mean, honestly, they're kicking things around so bad that we have to also worry about them. We got to make sure that no one is doing illegal, violent things to federal officials, to local police, to homeowners, to people, would-be militia members, because it is chaos. I mean, what is being sown with these militarized invasions from supposed law enforcement who are not acting like civilian law enforcement and are blatantly violating rights.
All right, let me ask you a question, Larry. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So first off, let me tell listeners that the reclamation of FAFO is fight against federal overreach.
Not as colorful.
But it makes a point. It makes a point. And what I want to know is if the Minnesota killings, okay, had been on South Broad Street and not in Minnesota, what would you be thinking to do now?
I would be doing exactly what I believe Mary Moriarty, who is the district attorney in Minneapolis, is doing. And she, by the way, is a member of this FAFO group. I would be investigating and trying to get as much information as I possibly could. You know, as we look at that video, those two videos, those two incidents with the videos of those two incidents, as we look at that, I think it's pretty obvious that there's probable cause for illegal criminal activity causing the deaths of two people. That's pretty clear. But ordinarily, you get to examine the crime scene. You get all kinds of forensics, meaning all kinds of crime science. You get to talk to all these witnesses. You get to make sure nobody messes up the crime scene. You get to dig deep. And what's happening, of course, is a cover-up. It's an effort by the feds to make sure the locals cannot get enough information to succeed at trial. Probable cause is not enough, as you well know. We have to prove cases beyond reasonable doubt. So I know that what you have going on in Minnesota is Mary Moriarty, the DA, plus the Attorney General, trying to get all the information they can, and that's what I would be doing here. There will come a point, though, where the information is either obtained or it's not going to be obtained. And at that point, You charge. You charge even if the case is not perfect. You charge even if you're going to have to ask for special jury instructions so that the jury knows that you don't have evidence because the feds blocked you from getting it. You're going to have to, you know, do some other things that are unusual, because what is happening is the feds really are trying to obstruct justice. And that, by the way, is another state court crime. The feds really are tampering with evidence. And that, by the way, is another state court crime. And, and you know, and the list goes on when they start to lie, and they've lied constantly. When they start to lie on official paperwork about what happened, you're then in the zone of false statements to police. And if they say it on the stand, you're in the zone of perjury. So there are a lot of crimes here that need to be addressed. There's a lot of accountability that needs to happen. But you don't just rush headlong into charging people the next day if it means you're not going to have a good case when you get to trial.
You know, as a civil trial attorney, we have spoliation of evidence that we can get a judge to tell the jury that there was evidence which was available and the defendants lost it, threw it away, did away with it. But you can assume that if that evidence were preserved, it would not be favorable to the defendant. And so do you have something like that on the criminal side where you can charge the jury that the failure to provide the evidence is an indication of guilt?
Short answer is yes. I mean, you know, even in states where there is not a clear jury instruction, where it hasn't been litigated, I think it's obvious that due process should make it so the defense can't say, oh, he's innocent because they don't have evidence, without the jury knowing why they don't have evidence. It's a little complicated because presumably if you're bringing criminal charges, they're against individuals. They're usually not against, you know, and they're not going to be against the entire federal government. So it's not necessarily the shooter who is actually refusing to give access. So it's complicated. But, you know, in any decent system, the jury has to know that the prosecution was denied the opportunity to get certain kinds of evidence, or it's just not a fair proceeding.
When do you think, you have any sense of when we'll see action taken by Minnesota on behalf of the people of Minnesota on this potential crime?
You know, I think you're going to see it once Mary Moriarty and the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota have made all their legal efforts to get everything. I think what we're already seeing is that they're in court getting orders that the evidence not be destroyed. They are going to probably be in both state and federal court, if I were to guess, getting orders that should force the government to turn things over. And then, of course, if those orders go in favor of the prosecution, you're probably going to see a bunch of appeals that will be taken by the federal government to try to slow that down. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to bring charges. That's just my guess. I don't know this. But I think they're going to bring charges after they've exhausted all the different efforts to get a more complete pile of evidence.
Larry Krasner, Philadelphia DA and a progressive prosecutor, you're working with other cities in the country to curtail overreach by the federal government. And I, for one, appreciate that. Thank you, Larry, for being a part of Court Radio today, and have a great Saturday, sir.
Here, here.
Of course. Thank you. It's always great to talk. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. We had the Krasner, the Krasinator.
Is that what it is? The Krasner?
The Kraken? The Krasner?
Krasinator is in the house here.
According to Fox News, he's the George Soros-backed progressive district attorney.
You know,
this is a small bunch of wannabe Nazis, and we will hunt you down. We will blah, blah. My God, he's a lightning rod with a headline, ain't he?
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and I was going to mention it to him, but we just ran out of time. He seems like he's hated by less people today than he was when he first came around. So he's, you know,
three times.
I know. That's what my point. He's kind of become somebody who's, is he progressive? Yes. And is he out there fighting for the people? I believe
Absolutely.
He is. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think he's been around long enough now where people are just like, oh, well, that's Larry. You know,
what he is? He's an acquired taste. And three terms, yeah, folks,
And they see him out there, like they say, he's swinging, man. He's taking on people. He's calling people out, naming names. He's not afraid.
Yeah.
It's that Philly flavor. He's got it.
Yeah.
He's one of us.
He definitely doesn't have a Philly accent.
Nah, I mean, not he, at all.
It sounds like Midwestern or something.
But
he's got some kind of a twang.
He's from here.
Yeah?
Yeah, educated here. Kind of like you in some ways.
Yeah, but he wasn't born and raised here. No, no, no.
You refuse to believe that?
No, I know he was. He can't. Okay. Not
he
can't
be.
Not with that accent. No.
No? Not even on main. Not on this side of the main line, maybe?
Absolutely okay. Not. No. He comes from a foreign land.
Listen to you.
I'm telling you, I can tell. I can listen to that voice. It's not. It's not a Philly voice.
It's not a Philly voice.
Yeah,
he says water just like the rest of us.
No. All right, enough. We've deprived our special guest
of
his
star.
Moment of shining. Shine bright, little star. We have Ricky Paladino in the studio. Good morning, Ricky, and welcome to Core Radio.
Best name in the game.
Good morning, Dean. Good to be here, and definitely have a Philadelphia voice here.
There you go. That's hey.
Well, I don't know.
What?
Maybe main line.
Who made you?
Maybe Southwest Philly. Yeah.
Delco. It's a Delco voice.
Yeah, there you go. Ah.
See? Very good. Yeah. Very good. Go ahead,
you
Dean.
You can't F-A-F-O with me. All right. Listen, how are things in your business?
Well, we're busy, but not busy in a good way, Dean.
Busy. I can't get a text back from him. Have you changed your cell phone?
I have. So that's what it is. Because I would always get back to you.
Rick, you told no one.
Yeah. I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
What steps have you taken to protect Ricky Paladino in this new environment?
Well, that's a really good question.
The main
step is to make sure that I take care of my staff, which is an extension of me, right? And to make sure that we have a realistic viewpoint on what's going on right now, which is that the federal government is hell-bent on enforcing immigration law, even though they're violating people's due process rights and all rights that people have. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. And for us to recognize that we are part of what they're going after. So we have to be very careful in
when you say
what we do.
You're talking about you and your staff.
I'm talking
your
about
law
me
firm.
And my staff, right. We're on the front lines fighting against what the Trump administration is trying to do. And we're fighting against them in the immigration courts and also in the federal courts. And it would be foolish of us to think that they're not going to look at us at some point and try to silence us, because by and large, we are having success against them, especially in federal court, in arguing that a lot of what they're doing violates the Constitution. So I don't think that we should be shy in what we're doing. I don't think that we should bow down to them and not take our work seriously and fight for our clients. But I just think we have to recognize that at some point, the flashlight, if you will, is going to be shown upon us. And aside from that, that's it. That's all that we can do. And then also, you know, taking care of ourselves on a personal level, making sure we shut the cell phones off, making sure that we take vacations. That's all important. But the most important part is realizing that we are on the other side of the gun, so to speak.
Yeah. He makes no bones about it.
Yep.
Are many of the immigration judges, and just briefly explain the administrative system. Like, how does that fit into the federal court system? And are those judges recently appointed judges under Trump?
Sure. So there's two main agencies, if you will, that deal with the immigration system. The first is the Department of Homeland Security, which was created after 9/11. And the Department of Homeland Security has three parts to it. ICE, which is always in the news, that arrests, investigates, and prosecutes individuals. USCIS, that processes applications, like applications for naturalizations. And CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, also in the news, which traditionally has just dealt with enforcing the nation's immigration laws at the border, but are now on the interior of the United States shooting and killing people. The other agency is the Department of Justice. The immigration courts fall under the Department of Justice. So an immigration court judge is essentially a member of the Department of Justice. And when they preside over a court hearing, they have a lawyer on one side like me that represents the foreign national. And on the other side has ICE that represents the federal government. Now, what's happened is two things. Number one is the Trump administration has fired many immigration judges across the country.
Why?
Purely because they have high grant rates.
What does that mean?
Sure, it means that they're granting more cases to immigrants.
Oh.
That they are pro-immigrant. Yeah, they're looking at their statistics.
Really?
Yes.
And if you've been seen as somebody who's soft,
yes,
like you've let too many people in.
Yes.
Too many brown people.
Correct.
Into our white country.
Yep.
Then you get fired.
You get fired, right. And not only do you get fired, you get replaced with Trump-appointed, for the most part, military-based judges. And what I mean by that is...
JAGs?
These are JAGs that are being put in to essentially enforce the president's agenda. They're using AI to write their decisions because they don't know a lick about immigration law, right? But here's the second part that's happening. The judges that aren't being fired, we're seeing their approval ratings go down dramatically because they don't want to be fired because there's so much oversight.
You whip the dog, it sits in the corner.
That's exactly right. So the processing and the adjudication of cases in immigration court is significantly more challenging now than it was 2 years ago, and in ways that are, you know, very unfair to our clients.
That's what I want to know. Like, what gets you kicked out? What's something that they latch on to and go, you are not getting a green card?
Well, so there's a lot of cases in immigration court that fall on the margins. I'll give you two examples. One is a claim for political asylum, where someone has to demonstrate that they have a fear of persecution in their country, and they cannot return based on that fear of persecution, and there's nowhere else that they can go. A second type of case is a case called cancellation of removal, where someone has to demonstrate that they've been here for 10 years, they're good people, and their family, who are U.S. citizens or residents, would suffer an exceptional hardship without them, right? So how do you define exceptional hardship? Well, it's a lot differently defined now by the courts than it was, you know, 2 years ago. So it's such a vague and obscure system that it allows the courts to find ways to justify their decisions that they wouldn't have found 2 years ago.
Give us an example.
Sure. So let's say that someone is a citizen of Mexico. They've been here for 20 years. They've got three children that are U.S. citizens, one of which is autistic, right? 2 years ago, the court would look at that and say that Mexico does not have, you know, adequate resources for children with autism. And as a result of that, that's an exceptional hardship to that U.S. citizen child. Therefore, they should be granted this cancellation of removal. What's happening now is ICE is coming back and fighting the cases and saying, well, just saying someone is autistic could mean a lot of different things. There's a spectrum. This particular child falls in the middle of the spectrum. And we're looking at the child's grades. And sure, the child's not going to have that, is not going to have as equal of an opportunity in Mexico that they would here, but the child speaks Spanish and they could adjust in Mexico and have a decent life. It wouldn't be as good as it is here. Therefore, there's a hardship, and it might be an extreme hardship, but it's not exceptional. And the courts are agreeing with that. And then deporting essentially an entire family that's been here paying taxes for 20 years that includes a U.S. citizen autistic child.
Right. The children are actually U.S. citizens.
The children are U.S. citizens, right.
So they can't deport them.
Well, they can't deport them, but if they deport the father, right, and mom is also undocumented and says, I'm scared that I'm going to be arrested, so I'm going back, then the entire family follows them back.
What's the designation for the children? Are they the dreamers? What's that term for them?
Dreamers are children that came to the United States with their parents when they were under the age of 18, essentially.
All right.
They came across the border illegally.
Illegally.
But they came, you know, the DACA, the Dreamer children, they were like 5-year-old kid. Yeah, right. Mom and dad come across. The 5-year-old's here, and he's been here his entire life since 5 years old.
Speaks English easily.
He went to
that,
Philadelphia public schools. Right. He went to Temple University. Mm-hmm. He's got a job. He's paying taxes. He's got a social security number. He doesn't even speak Spanish anymore.
Yep.
And he is going to be thrown out.
Right, along with his siblings that were born here that are U.S. citizens,
right?
I mean, they're not being thrown out directly, but they're being thrown out indirectly because if their entire family unit leaves, of course, they're going to leave as well.
Yeah.
Imagine, it's a tough time, man.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, that's not the worst part. We'll get to that.
It is worse?
We'll talk about immigration detentions and really what people are protesting in Minnesota because I don't think that it's being talked about enough. But I'll defer to you, Dean, on when's the right time to talk about that.
And Ricky, and when we come back, talk about these expansions of warrants.
Sure.
Or not needing a warrant.
To come into your home.
Well, yeah. Yep. We have gotten to the place where first you needed to have a judicial warrant.
Mm-hmm.
A judicial warrant is a warrant signed by a judge. Then you needed an administrative warrant.
Mm.
That's a warrant signed by a manager, I guess, in ICE.
Yep. That's exactly right.
I wonder if they ever don't sign.
Exactly.
And now, the plebe on the street, the guy wearing the flak jacket.
And the mask.
And the mask.
And the sneakers.
He can just do a completely warrantless arrest.
He's Judge Dredd.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, essentially what they're doing is they're having it signed by another officer who's just an officer on the street, does not have management capabilities.
Sign this for me? Is that what it is?
Right, right. God. And so it really means nothing. It's very, very easy for them to get. And not only are they having their colleagues sign the warrants, but the warrants themselves are allowing them to enter into people's homes, which they've never traditionally done.
Because they determine that they're a flight risk?
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's their determination.
Yeah, right. They've made a determination that you won't be here when we come back. Not that you're a flight risk, but that you won't stay. Mm. You won't stay where we put you, and therefore we must arrest you. It's crazy.
It's totally crazy.
Yeah. Well, we gotta take a quick break, but I want to tell our listeners, YouTube and radio, that if you want to jump in on this conversation, we're happy to have you. Give us a call at 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal in the world. Have a great 2-minute break. We'll be right back with Ricky Paladino on the other side. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? Every day takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. Welcome back. I am your host, Dean Weitzman, every Saturday morning like clockwork, right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
And live on YouTube. If you'd like to watch us and listen, all you have to do is go to My Philly Lawyers website, click on the Court Radio button, and that'll take you right to YouTube Live. And then you get to see handsome Manny Manuel Glenn with that gorgeous beard and beanie hat.
I'm cultivating the best beard in Philadelphia. I'm working on it.
It's coming.
Bruh, it's below freezing, man.
I know. I was telling them that I had my driver bring me up from AC.
Well, you took an Uber. Stop.
No Uber.
Uber, come on.
No.
What driver?
Hey. It's Michael. Michael, the driver, is.
I didn't know this.
As I said before, they don't really care about me too much. They just want to make sure I'm back down there again, in the seat, you know, at the blackjack table.
That's all they care about.
Hit me.
How'd you do?
Very well last night.
Good.
Yeah, very well. I actually have a blackjack tournament tonight, $500,000, which I'll be playing in.
Wait. That's the payoff?
That's the payoff. Yeah.
How many others?
And when I get to the final table,
yeah, right.
Yeah, they're all going to want to chop it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not chopping. I didn't come there for a piece of the $500,000.
All or nothing, Dean.
That's it.
Back the truck up, put it in the truck. We out of here. Good for you. Good luck, man.
All right, thank you.
But do you really think could anybody pay any of us to protest in sub-degree temperatures like they're saying in Minneapolis? They're paid agitators.
Doing
Yeah, I don't know. They deserve it. Well, they're getting paid, you know.
But they're not always paying these people.
You know, listen, they said that about the good guys. They say it about the bad guys. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a paid actor. You can't believe anything. We're in a world where nothing means anything. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I blame it all on AI and social media.
But you know what you can believe? My Philly Lawyer.
There you go.
That's right.
We're there fighting in the trenches. There's no AI there, brother. Okay, so I got Ricky Palladino in the studio. It's a rare treat to have you here, Ricky. Welcome back to Court Radio.
Always like being here, Dean.
Yep.
Ricky focuses his practice on immigration, and it was a benign practice. You know, I had my wife, Mia, had her immigration papers and petition all handled by Ricky from beginning to end. She then subsequently became a green card holder. She had her 2-year green card, her 10-year green card, and now she's a citizen of the United States and proudly took the oath to become a citizen.
For Mia.
And Ricky shepherded her the entire way with his careful hand.
She did the right way.
Yes.
The process. She followed it.
Yep. Yeah. It was my honor to assist.
So I know firsthand that Ricky's a hardworking guy, and he's grown his practice tremendously. You started, it was like, you know, you and a girl in the back seat somewhere.
That's pretty much right. Yeah, it was probably
in an old Lincoln driving around looking for immigrants.
I think it was an old Cadillac. Yep. And there was probably five of us all together, and now we've got, I think, 16 attorneys. And we're about 45 people all together and growing because, you know, it doesn't look like we're going to get less busy over the next 3 years of the Trump administration. And we're certainly not going to back down. So,
yeah, they're fighters.
We're in it.
You know, Ricky, you started in the federal government.
With the INS,
yeah.
Which was the predecessor to ICE. They actually created the Department of Homeland Security and ICE, essentially.
Were you there?
After September 11th. Yeah, I worked for the agency on September 11th. And,
He looks like he's 20, but he's not, really.
Right. Yeah, it was 25 years ago that I worked for the Immigration Service, and it was a very different place than it is now. And the biggest difference is that historically it was an agency that was overworked and underfunded. Well, now they're overfunded. And that's what changes everything.
Money.
Money changes everything.
Follow the money.
Right, yeah. Right. And listen, they're budgeted all of that money, which, you know, is a budget larger than the U.S. Marine Corps. They're going to spend that money, right?
Business is
what
good.
We're seeing is not going to stop. And again, I think what the majority of Americans see is those horrible two shootings that happened of American citizens. But what they're not seeing and what has to get talked about more is how they're treating immigrants.
What? Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, so essentially what happens now that is very different than the 25 years that I've been in immigration law is that when someone gets arrested by the Department of Homeland Security or ICE, their ability to get out of jail is extremely limited. So let me break it down for you this way. There's three classifications of ways that people enter the United States. People enter the United States with visas. People enter the United States just by crossing the border, especially before we had a border that was secure, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and even 10 years ago. Or people that came and asked for political asylum at the border, which largely happened during the Biden administration after the COVID-19 pandemic. So two of those three classes of people, people that entered without inspection and people that came during the Biden administration, that would account for millions and millions of people. When the Immigration Service gets them, the Trump administration is forcing the immigration judges to conclude that they're not eligible for bail. Okay, so there is absolutely no way to get a judge to set a bail in order to set them free.
When you say judge, tell me
immigration agency judge.
Yeah, an administrative judge.
Now, I'll get to the third classification folks in a second, and then I'll tell you what we're doing to stop that. Even if you come with a visa, you can get a hearing for bail, but the majority of judges are denying bail, and we call it bond in the immigration system, left and right, again, because the real Trump-appointed judges, the ones that they really want to enforce their agenda, are the ones that they're assigning to do bond hearings. So 10 years ago when I was doing cases, if someone got arrested, if they had a serious criminal record, I couldn't do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were just someone that was simply here illegally and working, someone that was undocumented, I could get them a bond.
When you say undocumented, mm-hmm. What if they had like a work permit?
Yeah, so.
And a social security number.
Yep.
And ties to the community.
Right, right. So to me, those people are not undocumented.
Okay.
Right? And that's a misnomer, and we can get into that in a second because that's another important thing. But what happens going back to the individuals that are detained that have no chance of getting out, right, is that we have to file a lawsuit against the federal government in federal court called a writ of habeas corpus, and we have to allege that basically these people's constitutional rights are being violated by not being given access to a bail and not being given access to a fair process. Now, what's happening is if someone gets arrested in this area, they're taken for processing in Philadelphia. Most people sit in Philadelphia for 24 hours. If we can file the lawsuit while they're in Philadelphia, most federal district judges in Philadelphia are agreeing with us, and they're ordering the agency to release people. And I think it's 95% of these habeas corpus cases that have been filed across the country, federal judges are holding that ICE's tactics in detaining these people without a bond is a constitutional violation, right?
95%
of
wow.
Hundreds and hundreds of cases, yet they still do it, right? Now, here's the challenge. If we don't file the lawsuit within the first 24 hours of them being in Philadelphia, remember, they're being detained by the federal government. They have an infrastructure and a system now, because they've got so much money, where they're now transferring people all over the country. Sometimes we can't even find our clients to know where they are, to know which federal jurisdiction in which to file a lawsuit.
What's your infrastructure? I call,
yep.
And I say, hey, I got a client who's in he just got picked up. He was 69th in Market, and I don't know where he is. Here's his name and Social Security or his date of birth or
yep.
What have you.
Yep.
What do you do?
Well, first of all, our infrastructure on the front lines is that our staff speaks multiple languages, 14 different languages. So we're able to find out from people the biographic information about their family member. And most importantly, if they have any type of immigration documentation sitting in a pile somewhere, it most likely has something called an alien number. If they have an alien number, then it's rather easy for us to find them. If they don't have an alien number, it's very complicated, and it involves us using a government website that tells us where ICE detainees are located. We can also go to the prisons that people are most likely in and call the prison to see if they're there.
Do they put people down at the Sixth and Market?
Yes, they do at the Federal Detention Center.
Yeah.
So that's the main holding facility within that first 24 hours. So they go to ICE. They're processed at 8th and Arch. They're then moved not too far to the Federal Detention Center, the FDC. And then after that, you know, it's very unpredictable where they will end up.
Yeah, we were offline, and I was telling Ricky that one of the guys who was painting my house, he worked for the company that I had hired. He was picked up at 69th and Market, and he was scooped up. He hadn't done anything. He wasn't a criminal. He'd never done a criminal act in his life while he's been here in the United States. And he was just scooped up and then dumped down at the Federal Detention Center in Philly. And then within like 72 hours, he was shipped to Pittsburgh. And then within a week, he was shipped to Tennessee. And they just keep moving him around the country.
Right. And he's got no fair chance. And listen, this is what the people in Minnesota are protesting against, right? What the right will tell you is, what are all these paid agitators doing protesting for these criminal aliens? And they're not protesting that. But when ICE comes in a way in which they did, in Minneapolis, and you start seeing people that are part of your community, right? Your kids play with their kids. You see them every day when you walk into your building. They're doormen in your building and so on and so forth. And you realize that this person's been here. They're not undocumented. They actually have a social and a work permit, and they're paying taxes, and that they're being arrested, and they've got no fair chance once they get arrested. That's what's making people protest, right? Because it is a totally unfair system that's also inhumane. And, I give a lot of credit to the people from Minneapolis in drawing attention to it. But we need to, as a society, draw more attention to it, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to live in a country where we treat people like that. It's just not fair.
When he said, when he got elected and he was running for office, he said he's going to get rid of the criminal element of the immigrants. Those that are here illegally and are criminals, they're eating the dogs. We're going to get rid of them. And, you know, he was focused on, he led people to believe he was focused on the extreme of the immigrant population.
But at the same time said it's going to be the largest immigration deportation ever.
That's Stephen Miller talking.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yeah.
Whenever you get into a debate with Trump supporters about this issue, they would say, well, Obama and Biden deported more than Trump, and y'all didn't say anything. Aren't they saying, well, if Obama and Biden deported more, wouldn't you be happy about that? It seems as if they're not happy unless they see all this chaos and cruelty and everything associated with it, which I think is the difference. It's the approach. It's the procedure that's different. The way Trump is doing it, it's just chaotic.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So two things about the way Obama did things. Obama had something called prosecutorial discretion, which basically meant when the agency encounters someone that is here, that is undocumented or somehow in violation of the immigration law, they're going to take a holistic approach and look at this person and say, for example, the guy from Ecuador that's totally clean, that's maybe got family ties here and been here for a long time, we're not going to focus on him. And what they actually did was focus on the people that did have criminal records and people that quite frankly, maybe should be deported, right? And in putting their resources to that, they were able to effectuate a deportation process that was not chaotic, number one, and number two, that pretty much I think the majority of Americans agreed with, because they weren't, detaining people that didn't do anything wrong. they were also giving people a fair opportunity to try to become legalized. Most notably, a fair opportunity to be released from detention or to get a bond if they were encountered. And the second thing that Obama did was they deported a lot of people that from the border that were trying to come into the United States. So people think that it was the Trump administration that really strengthened the border. And that's true. It became more strengthened under the first Trump term. But it really was started by Obama and using something called the expedited removal process at the border in order to deport people. So in my opinion, Obama did it in a humane way and in a way that I think benefited the right cause or the cause of the right to get, criminal aliens, so to speak, out of the United States.
There were ICE
this is not doing
then.
That.
There were ICE agents back then, right?
There were tons of ICE agents
But no one got killed.
No one got killed. Well, they didn't have these, Gestapo groups that were going into cities in order to, create chaos.
They weren't roving around just stopping people or,
Right. And look, I started my career working for the Immigration Service. Let me tell you something that's happened with ICE. The ICE officers that have been there for a long time, that were trained properly, that obeyed the Constitution, they fired them. And they've put new people in there. There were good people that were working for ICE
on the
other side, right? What they've also done is the majority of people that they brought into Minneapolis were CBP officers, not ICE officers. Now, this is an important distinction. ICE is trained to get warrants. They're trained to then process people knowing that they're going to go through an immigration court system. And again, I'm not defending ICE, but their training is a lot different than CBP, which is basically a rogue government agency that exists at the border, right, where we're in a very gray area with the law. So they're not trained on the Constitution. They're not trained on an investigative process. They're basically on the border of the United States, almost acting like linebackers on a football field, right? Just looking for targets and going out and physically arresting them however they can. They're combating human trafficking. They're combating people that are coming to the United States through coyotes, and they're combating, the drug trade through the border. Their training is very, very different from ICE. And that's part of what we saw happen in Minneapolis, right?
Yeah, and not for the streets.
Right. You put these animals into the street that are used to doing a job, a certain way.
Yeah.
And you got this absolute chaos. And that's why Trump had put, Tom Homan back in charge at Minneapolis, because he's a traditional ICE guy, traditional ICE agent. And I think what you're going to see, or what I hope you see, and again, this is not going to solve the problem, but at least this is a very quick solution in order to make things safer, is get CBP the hell out of there, because they're way too dangerous. They're not properly trained. Let ICE deal with it, at least right now, and then let the courts and people like me deal with ICE.
Can it get worse?
It can.
And how would that look? But we're going to take a quick break before we get into that. Folks, we got Ricky Paladino here, immigration extraordinaire, attorney, Philadelphia and the surrounding area. If you've got legal issues, we've got the answers. We'll be back in 2 minutes. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. Welcome back. I am your host, Dean Weitzman, every Saturday morning right here, 100.3 WRNB.
Classics 107.9.
We started this hour with Larry Krasner, FAFO, Fight Against Federal Overreach, and what Larry would do if Minnesota's murders happened here.
Which is tough.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could hear a little bit of the frustration in his voice because, you know, the bottom line is that the federal government can try and prevent the dissemination of everything, the names of the people who did it, where they live, what their addresses are. I mean, how do you prosecute somebody if you don't know that basic information? And so you got to go to court. You got to get judges to sign off on, you know, warrants and demands for providing information, and then they fight that, and it goes up onto the appellate court, and it takes forever. I mean, if anything, Trump has learned over the years how to use the courts in his favor, which now segues and brings me full circle to our in-studio guest, Ricky Paladino, who's an immigration attorney, to say, you know, here you have these folks who have been scooped up and their rights have been deprived. And, you know, there may be some on the right who say, well, they don't even have constitutional rights. They're not citizens of the United States. What constitutional rights do they have? What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think they have to read the Constitution, right? Because the Constitution, if you read it, does make a distinction in certain places where it uses the term person, in certain places where it uses the term citizen. And the due process clause applies to any person. And I don't think there's any constitutional scholar out there that would say that someone that is here in the United States is not entitled to due process. And it's just a Fox News talking point, and it's unfortunately a talking point that I hear all the time from people that claim to know the Constitution and believe in our laws. Read it. It's clear as day.
All right. I hate to have a whole show without a listener chiming in. So let's talk to Ronnie from Germantown on line two.
Yep. Yes. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Ronnie.
Good morning, Ronnie. Make it quick because we're running out of time.
Yes, very quickly. So I've been seeing a lot of these reels on Facebook about Germany, and I just have a concern that some of the things that I'm seeing that happened at that time are kind of parallel to what's happening now a little bit. So I'm just concerned about that. I just want to know what Ricky's opinion is on that, or anybody.
Listen, I tend to agree with you. And, you know, I do think that, unfortunately, Ronnie, what we're seeing now is just going to get worse. We're going to see it on a much, much larger scale moving forward. And I don't think that we should count on the courts to stop it. I think it's the voice of the American people that's got to stop it, just like we're seeing in Minneapolis. And I, you know, hope and pray that the American collective conscience gets it together and realizes that this is not what we're all about, and puts an end to this.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Yeah, thanks, Ronnie. So that was my question before we went to break is, how is it that this could get worse?
Well, right now, if ICE in Philadelphia, for example, arrests 100 people a day, the reason they arrest 100 people a day is because they only have the capacity to detain 100 people a day. As they start putting all of the money that they have into more detention facilities throughout the United States, you're going to see it increase to 200 people a day, and then 300 people a day, and then 500 people a day. And it's not going to stop until the American people, the voice of American citizens and non-American citizens, start swaying our politicians to let them know that this is not something we support and something that's going to result in them not being reelected. The biggest problem in all of this is that, you know, we don't have an immigration debate in Congress right now. The reason we don't is because the law that was signed in 1996, unfortunately by President Clinton, gives the agency a tremendous amount of power. The agency's never used it before in the ways that they're doing now. So they've got the law on their side, by and large. They've got money galore. And as of right now, other than what we're seeing in Minneapolis, they have a rather silent population against what's happening to immigrants, not American citizens being shot, but it's being silent on what's happening to immigrants, and that's got to change.
What happens to this country if we don't have an immigrant population? You know, what happens?
You answered the question.
What happens to America when immigration is cut to a trickle and only educated and degreed people get to come here?
Yeah, I think the ultimate end goal of the administration is automation. It's to take all the jobs that immigrants traditionally do, from driving a tractor trailer to picking avocados, and to have a robot do it, right? Because in their mind, the robot doesn't pollute society with their different views and their different religions. In their view, the robot doesn't take welfare and other government programs and abuse them. And the robot would, take the place of an immigrant in a way that would whitewash America to make it much better for the average white American. I think that's ultimately what their goal is. And I certainly hope I'm wrong. But if you pay close enough attention to what they're saying, I think you can start to hear that's exactly what they're going for.
Wow.
Didn't they watch The Terminator? Skynet? I mean, really?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
That was a mouthful, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a, you know, listen, you don't need people calling you, but what's the office number?
Sure.
Okay. I mean.
Yeah. And we're happy to help anyone in need. We do our best to help. Office number 215-576-9000. Two Philadelphia offices and an office in Media, Delaware County.
Two Philadelphia offices.
Two Philadelphia offices.
Where's the
right?
Second
That's
one?
Rare. South Philadelphia, Broad and Wolf. We bought a historic mansion and converted it into our office, and then 1528.
Yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah, I mentioned it the last time. I'll have to have you guys by.
Did it get plowed?
It got plowed.
All right.
It got plowed late, but it got plowed.
Sounds like there's going to be a claim against the plow company. Okay, we are all out of time, folks. It was a really interesting show, made all the more so by Ricky Paladino's insights. Ricky, thanks for being a part of the Court Radio family.
I love being with you guys. Cheers.
Folks, we'll see you next Saturday, same time, same place. Have a great week. Be safe.